Hey everybody, this is Spike Ferriston from Spike's Car Radio. We're out here in the porch of at the Malibu Kitchen at the Malibu Country Mart every weekend doing podcasts. My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. We're going to have Jeremy Piven. We're going to have Chris Hardwick. See you soon on Spike's Car Radio.
I think he's over-projecting for a podcast.
And I love to over-project for podcasts. Join me every week at PodcastOne.com and Apple Podcasts.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you for all you do. How you doing, Drewski? Well,
thank you, sir.
Yeah, man.
It's a good day.
What's going on with you?
Lots of shit.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
My mom passed away. That happened.
When was that?
About a week ago. So,
how did it make you feel? I'm sorry to hear that.
That's right. Weird. You know what I mean?
Weird. No, I do know what you mean, because my parents are old, and I have no real connection with them. But I think if they pass, I think I'll just feel weird, because I'm not going to feel a lot of, oh, man, I'm really going to miss out on the softball games or anything like that. It's just going to feel weird.
Yeah, right. And so you feel bad for them. You feel bad for her. You feel bad for – I feel gypped a little bit. Like, yeah,
it's weird. I don't ever feel bad for – maybe it's my pragmatism meets soullessness. But, you know, I hear people like going, she died at 88, you know, and I go – all right. Well, she had a good life. And they go, yeah, it's really tragic, though.
No, it's really sad.
In a world where no one ever dies, it is. But
you get past 85, I'm celebrating every day. That's just the way it goes in my head.
You've outlived 98.3% of human beings who have ever come before you. Yeah. I'm going to call that a good life.
A win.
You know?
Yeah.
And the people go, yeah, but it's still a tragedy.
Here's what's weird. So I get very much more focused on...
How old did your mom live?
Almost 92.
Okay.
Dying with dignity than squeezing another day.
Right.
Right. I've dealt with elderly patients for years. I've had thousands of people.
I spoke to some of them in the back of town cars.
That's right. That's right. But you still feel bad. You know, my sister posted a bunch of stuff of her as a young woman. So you feel bad that the lost youth and the time gone by and that wistful kind of.
I get that.
And a life gone. Vanished.
Do we feel? I guess it's sort of like you can treat your life like your high school playing days, which is. I mourned not being able to play football anymore.
Yeah.
But I got so much accomplished in the last 2 years that I look back with pride, and I don't have a sense of longing or missing or opportunities lost. When I see somebody who, let's just say that, okay, here you go. They always say, well, you only use about 8% of your brain or whatever it is. I don't know how they figure that out, but... I don't know how a guy who only uses 8% of his brain can figure out we only use 8% of his brain, but that's it. How much of your life do you use? My mom used less than 10% of her life in her existence.
Yeah.
Your mom used a higher level of that. When you sit around and talk to guys like, I don't know, Norman Lear at age 94, you go, God, that guy used 87% of his life, you know, or the guys who have traveled and loved and conquered and climbed Everest. You know what I mean? Like those. I don't mean crazy achievements. I'm not turning it into Dos Equis commercial, but that life seized and lived. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Versus watch my stories. You know what I mean?
Interestingly, there's something I don't think she really had that you're talking about here, which is each stage was grabbed. She had like a very vibrant period and then raised a family and not so much after that. And
that's sort of sad.
Yeah, and I feel bad for the lost stuff that she lost. And then you get sadness. You get sad, which is natural. That happens. And then I got angry. I had all kinds of crazy feelings.
Well, angry at what?
All kinds of stuff.
Just being a fair to Midland mom?
Yeah, that kind of angry stuff.
What's the main beef?
God, I hate. It's weird, you know.
I do feel free to talk.
Shit, now that she's not around, but I don't want to like, jump onto it.
You know? Well, I think in a weird way, I would almost treat them sort of like an animal who does what they do, but you don't blame them for doing what they did. That's just kind of what they were capable of and who they were.
Yeah.
It's
called forgiveness. It's acceptance and forgiveness.
That might be an insult. But, I mean, I have to think about my own parents all the time, and I just go, they're horrible, but they are who they are.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
It's not even worth getting mad about it because it's just who they are.
Did you ever feel gypped? That was a new feeling for me.
It's weird. No, I never, and I think in all the complaining you've heard.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Have I brought this up?
I don't think I complain about it.
I don't think it's ever ripped off or gypped. I just felt like it was very bad placement. Like very.
Like bad casting? Don't put this horrible, kid with these parents.
Horrible casting. No, because the only thing I love more than, you know, hey, I got an idea. Mm. What do you think? Is. I love cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's just a bad combo.
Yeah.
That's a bad. If they had gotten, let's say, Anne Frank, and I wanted to, if my parents had sired Anne Frank, and I'd said, hey, I want to go up to the attic and lock myself up and read a book and write my memoir. They would have went, hey, go ahead. Yeah. That's perfect. We'll be napping.
See you in 3 years.
Yeah. Perfect. When the Gestapo comes calling, we'll happily, right this way. Oh, Colonel Klink, yeah, we've been waiting on you. Come on in. I break this from up. Oh, no time? Okay, she's up in the attic. That would have been perfect, but with my sensibilities, I'm going to go out and throw a ball with somebody, yeah. And that didn't work well. No. What about your combo, placement with your parents?
Placement was good. Placement was all right.
Well, how was placement with your mom?
That kind of placement, not bad. The problem was I had the temerity to want to be a person. You know what I mean? Some people can't deal with separation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what I was dealing with there.
Uh-huh.
I'd say that'd be my humble estimate.
And your mom and your dad, what do you think kept them together for as many years as they were?
I don't know.
Is it?
I mean, it wasn't.
There was a familiarity back. There was a time when you stayed together because you were together.
Yeah.
Now we have options.
Yeah.
And a lot of people exercise those. And that's why you hear your friends, you know, parents married for 31 years, they're getting divorced. And like that was never.
Well, first of all, divorce was not a thing.
Right.
Like that. Although my mom has a crazy backstory that she took to her grave that I accidentally found out about. Remember? Remember this?
Yeah, I do.
And I don't know if I should be honoring the fact that she took it to the grave or now talking all about it.
I always honor the fact that anyone takes anything to the grave.
All right.
I'm never a fan of parents laying stuff on their kids under the, you're old enough to know now, or I thought you should know, or your father knows, now you should know. I've always.
So, all right, I feel comfortable then talking about it in generalities. Divorce was a shameful thing back then.
Right.
And she went through something like that and had to hide it.
Right.
And did so and took that to her grave and denied it all the way to her grave, even though there's ample evidence on the internet of what actually happened. And I spoke to her stepson. But otherwise, that's no big deal. So,
right.
So.
Oh, stepson.
Oh, yeah.
He said her stepson, which is.
Well, let me sort of put it this way. Many, many, many years with that young man and left overnight. That gives you a sense of what.
The stepson.
Think Don Draper.
Uh-huh.
It just didn't happen.
Right.
That's who she
I'm was. The only guy who's never saw Mad Men, but I've seen commercials.
Well, so, Don Draper had this horrible backstory. He just pretended it didn't happen. Just didn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And
then reinvented himself as somebody else.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on back then.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, my grandma did the same thing with my mom. Just, hey, get over it and move on.
Yeah.
You know, moving on.
You'll hear things like, you just have to decide it didn't happen. It just didn't. That's it.
Or you want it to happen again. If you keep talking about it, we're reliving it. You know, just put it behind. I don't think the notion
You noticed that the processing was not.
No, we didn't need to process anything. We just it happened. It was like a car accident. You may walk with a limp, but we're not gonna re-break the leg and reset it. You know, why go through this? Just moving on.
But it was not a great way to create a emotionally available environment for children. Let's put it that way.
Understood. Okay. You want to laugh? How about
yeah, I do.
You do? Jim Gaffigan. Cinco, man. Latest stand-up comedy album, Cinco, now available via Comedy Dynamics. I love Jim Gaffigan. He's such a funny stand-up. Mm-hmm. And it just I always listen to him whenever I listen to Comedy Channel. And it's always clean and super clever. The album version of his critically acclaimed stand-up comedy special, with additional track commentary from Jim and his wife. I believe his wife writes a lot of material for him or with him. Explores why cable news anchors have to be so attractive, the pointlessness of hiking, America's fascination with pickup trucks, and more. Also, currently on the road on his Noble Ape World Tour, taking him to arenas in North America, Europe, and more. So check it out. Jim Gaffigan, Cinco. Buy or stream Cinco on your favorite digital platform. Jim Gaffigan, the guy, just funny.
Does
just
not
nice.
Disappoint.
Never disappoints. No. Just a consummate stand-up. Yeah. All right. So getting so over that.
So, okay. Moving on.
How'd your sister do?
She's struggling. She's affecting her.
Is the struggle the feelings that it unearths and then the wrestling with those feelings?
There's that, and there's the sort of there's a sadness in grief, right? I mean, you know, depression, you'll get depressed if you cling to the denial and things, and sadness is the actual grief, and grief has a weird way of washing over you. It just comes. It's like it's a weird sort of like waves on the shore kind of quality to it. And then sometimes when it washes up, it brings a bunch of other shit with it, memories, mm-hmm. feelings you don't expect, and you just got to kind of roll with it. It's kind of interesting, mm-hmm. and it's kind of unpleasant.
When you got out of the house...
As a young man.
Yes.
When I tunneled out.
When
saying.
You tunneled out,
yes.
Was that kind of it with the folks in you? Or... I mean, you know, you have to Christmas and holidays and stuff like that. But I mean, was there a feeling of like I'm out and I'm staying out?
Oh yeah. Once I was, I tried to live back home for a brief period of time. It was one of the most I skin crawling uncomfortable.
Why?
I couldn't do. I don't know. I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. It was really, really unpleasant for me.
So
because I had tunneled out, it's like well, so you tunneled out of prison and then they put you back for a few days. How was that? It's like
well, why
it's
do you say
worse than when I was there the first time.
Why do you say tunneled out?
Because there certainly wasn't the like we see who you are, what your talents and your emotional needs are, and let's support those, and maybe we can sort of talk about that and send you off into your whatever. It was like. No, Dad, I made reservations for a flight, and it only cost $300. Is it okay? Yeah, yeah. All right. Okay, scram.
<It's> like, well,
okay.
Was there – I mean, I think –
it probably
off,
was me. It was me, to be fair.
Well, all right. Let's open it up to a slightly bigger thing, which is going on, which is something I've been shouting about for a million years. But now there's this sort of new movement afoot, which is, hey, you know – we don't need to pack everyone off to college. We need to look at our kid and figure out what they want to do,
yeah.
what they are doing, what they seem to be doing, what their strengths are, and let's play to them. And that might not be just taking general ed classes at the college. So there's a focus on kids now that never fully.
Well, and this whole idea of dropping the kid off at college. I was like, oh, what? Sending the.
Oh, when I hear the stories about. My contemporaries and their, college age kids, and they, James Baby Doll Dixon is going to Duke because it's parent, teacher evaluation and sleeping over and staying over and then picking her up at Duke and then driving her back to whatever and then going, taking her back to Duke and then going out to, like, the kids on, well, first off, James Babydoll Dixon's been on the campus of Duke more than I've been on any college campus in my entire life, excluding the ones you and I did as adults.
Like, it's very fun. It's really fun. In fact, it's almost like made me guilty fun. Like, this shouldn't be for me. This should be for me supporting them. You know. But then again, now I feel bad for my parents. They missed out on that. They didn't even know how to do that.
Well, it didn't really exist.
It didn't really exist. It did not exist. I'm not sure I would have allowed it either. It would have been like, huh? You were sort of, back then, you were kind of embarrassed by your parents.
Well, you were embarrassed by your parents, number one. And number two, the whole idea was not to flee to a safe space. The idea was to be an adult and get out.
Yeah.
That was the plan. Speaking of that.
Gone.
No safe spaces. .com is where you can go.
I like that.
Dennis Prager getting end of the week this week is the cutoff. Oh. We got somebody who's going to fork over $500K if we hit our mark, and we're getting close. So just go. No, safespace.com and check it out. And watch the clips. I think they're really funny.
That's crazy. Well, as long as we're doing brilliant segues, talking about marriages, how about Married at First Sight? Mm. New episode every Thursday, 9, 8 Central on Lifetime. The new season follows Chicago singles who agree to get legally married to a stranger the moment they first meet. Think of that conceit. Oh, man. Team of experts create three compatible couples based on scientific matchmaking. And there are these compatibility scales you can do that really increase the probability that you'll dig each other or stay with each other, but they do not meet until they walk down the aisle and see each other for the first time. And I will tell you what, there's a gigantic difference between, you know, what we should match up technically and then chemistry. This thing we call chemistry is something that no one's ever really been able to dial in. But after several weeks together, they must decide stay together or divorce. Catch up on full episodes on demand at MyLifetime.com. That is MyLifetime.com. Or get the Lifetime app. Watch new episodes every Thursday, 9 o'clock, 8 Central on Lifetime.
All right. So someone's got a question. Yeah. But
it's been very emotional, very intense. I'm not quite sure where to go with, you know, my feelings or what to talk about public and stuff. But I figured you'd have some sense of it. But, you know, she'll be missed. She will be missed. And I feel sad that she's gone. I feel sad for her. But I feel great.
Other than the being dead part.
Right. I'm delighted that she got so many years.
Do you feel like she had a good life?
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. She had a good life, and she died with dignity, which I'm always grateful for. She had such that Don Draper denial thing so profound that she missed out on a ton. I will just say that.
Well,
I mean, for instance, like, she has some of your grandmother's stuff, too. You know, my father never missed a baseball game or a football game my sons played in. My mother never went to one.
I don't it's always, you know, explaining this is sort of like a Hawaiian explaining how delicious poi is. When you try to explain to people that, you know, my parents are indifferent about Jimmy Kimmel hosting the Oscars, you know, or sort of incredulous about it. And everyone's like, why? Why? And it's like, well, that's how you know it's. When you have to ask why, the wiring is fucked up.
Right.
But it is bizarre when the kids get over it and the kids go out and play and the kids achieve and or don't achieve or have whatever experiences they have on the gridiron. This is for them, for the parents,
yeah,
or the grandparents,
yeah.
In this case, why not enjoy that as a grandparent?
To me, it feels like, you asked, had she lived a good life? It's like, well, you missed out on a bunch of shit because of all that denial and stuff and whatever that was.
But what was the denial of the kids' football game? Why was that? Why did that fall under the Don Draper denial department?
It felt like it was in the same zone. Like, we just won't discuss why I'm not there, whatever it is. I have no idea. Just not open for discussion. What's for dinner?
Well, the thing that's, you know, I was just
like a steel trap, man.
I was floundering around with my kids in the swimming pool last night, and I was swimming around with them for a while, just like 9 o'clock at night, and just throwing them and having fun or whatever. And it's like, I get it because I have that wiring where I'm like, I'd want to go on to Twitter and check some stuff, or I want to go check some this thing or that thing, or I want to go watch one of my shows instead. I'm sort of bounding about my underwear with my kids. And then at a certain point, I got up. I've been in here for half an hour. I think we're good. And I got up, and my son just said, oh, Dad, where are you going? And I'm like, I'm going to head in the house. And I'll stay, you know. You don't have to get in the pool, but stay out here. You know, like, well, it's clear that even though I wasn't going
to
frolic with him in the pool, he wanted me there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I had this impulse of like, hey, you did your duty. It's been a half hour.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
been a half hour. It's a little cold out here. And I said, yeah, okay, let me get my bathrobe on. I'll just sit on the chair here. And I'm not wired to sit on the chair, but he asked, and so be it, and that'll be his memory. And I would not like to, you know, fast forward X amount of years and have him sort of ambivalent
yeah.
about me and, you know, do the, dad was dad. He's set in his ways. He's a complex guy. Yeah, well, you know, he'd seen a lot.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sure
know,
I will
not,
talk.
Not a bad dad. And then the qualifier, when you come from what he came from.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want the qualifier.
Right. They did the best they could.
Yeah.
I will talk more as time goes on. I just want to be honor her life and stuff for now. So.
All right. Let's see. Dr. Drew, sex addiction.
Let's do that.
All right. Let's talk to, let's see, Dan, 33, Washington State. Dan?
Hi. Yes.
Hey.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Well, you need my question?
Yes, that'd be great.
Yep.
I was just wondering if sex addiction was like a real thing, or if it's just like an excuse people use, or what your what it is.
Well, right. Again, whenever people ask about a clinical construct that tens of thousands of clinicians use in their treatment models, and ask if something's a real thing, I think, well, it's kind of a weird question, but... The question is, can someone use the idea of sex addiction? And to be clear, sex addiction has not reached the level of consensus that it is at yes in the diagnostic manual, though I suspect one day it will. Other sort of terminology is in the manual.
What percentage of the sexually addicted are not addicted to anything else, cigarettes, booze, even coffee,
yeah.
or weren't formally addicted to something else?
It's relatively small.
Right. So it feels like it's part of a more global addiction.
It's usually someone who has other addictions who then also gets sex addiction or crosses over to sex addiction.
Right.
Though there are plenty of, you know, survivors of severe sexual abuse and whatnot that do develop sexual compulsion, sexual addiction. The question he's asking, though, is can people use that diagnostic label, which again is not formally a diagnosis, as an excuse? And of course they can. And again, you know, when does something really reach the threshold where it needs treatment is really what the question is. And I would look more at what people do to change. In other words, if they're going, hey, what am I going to do, man? I'm a sex addict. Well, that's an excuse.
Right.
As opposed to if you were to say, hey, man, I'm in treatment. I've been trying. I keep slipping up. I'm doing the best I can. All right. Well, that's a little different, right? Does
mm-hmm.
that make sense?
Yeah.
So somebody who's trying, who's working, is in treatment of some type. And believe me, it's hard. And again, let's look at Tiger Woods, a great example of which the question you asked, Adam, but chemicals and sex. He was treated inpatient for sex addiction, and lo and behold, oh, seems to be a chemical problem here now.
I feel like it usually goes the other direction.
It usually does, and we don't know that it didn't. It might have gone chemical, sex,
bounce back.
Yeah.
But
he's in treatment now, apparently, although – the treatment, again, it's not been confirmed where he is, but what I'm hearing, what the rumors at least are, TMZ is reporting, it's more going after the chronic pain treatment, which is never going to be good. That's going to go bad. That is in the realm of he's going to be chronically ill with stuff.
So Dan?
It's bad.
Yes.
How's this pertain to you?
Well, it's just something me and my girlfriend had been discussing, and I spoke with like a sexologist on Twitter this morning who claims it isn't a real thing, and I was under the impression that anything that you
okay.
do despite the negative impact on your life would be considered an addiction.
That is right, but be careful on clinical people's training. Sexologist is not a clinician. That's
okay.
somebody who typically does sex education. And their concern is that somehow by calling something sex addiction, you're being sex negative. No, I'm being sex positive. It makes people do horrible things. I've seen horrible shit go down. And we want to keep it positive, and it may help them flourish with it. That's exactly the goal. If you say – it's just like, again, if you say something doesn't exist, my thing always is, guys, there's a wind blowing. There's a wind. Don't fucking tell me we have to tack against the wind. Let's go with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this thing that happens, and it's a motivational system, and it's built off trauma – and we can deal with it. There's lots of effective treatments out there.
Well, for a long time, it was like, is alcohol really a disease? All this kind of stuff.
Still,
and
you hear that shit.
Well, still, but not as much debate as you used to hear. Yeah. But my whole feeling is look, whether it is really this or really that, there's something called alcoholism, and it should be treated.
Really, and by the way, whenever somebody says, oh, I don't think it's a real thing, go, look, it's a syndrome. It's a constellation of symptoms that keep recurring. That's factually the case. It's a constellation of behaviors and symptoms. Therefore, it is a syndrome. Whether that syndrome is also a specific diagnosis, meaning having a unified cause and a unified biology, that's kind of debatable, kind of. But it is a syndrome, and it's unassailable.
I agree, man. Wow, look,
thank
at
you,
Drew.
Man
of exquisite passion.
Exquisite.
You should be looking at TrueCar, my friend.
I should be. I may come around again. I'm getting a little frustrated with the current thing.
You're getting ready to get a new car or a used car.
Yeah,
you go to TrueCar.
I'm only getting used cars. That's my new motto.
Yeah, we get one like Max Pass.
Yeah,
like 15 minutes old.
I'm in.
TrueCar, real pricing on actual inventory, not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual TrueCar certified dealer. Over 3 million cars sold by over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. TrueCar users save an average of $3,000 off of MSRP. So, when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar and find out exactly what other people are paying, whether it's new, whether it's used. You go online, you go to TrueCar.com, you lock in your price, you get your certificate, you showed up to one of the 13,000 dealers nationwide, and you go pick up your new ride. So, whether you're buying new, whether you're buying used, you go with TrueCar and you enjoy a more confident buying experience. All right, let's see. Brenda, 49 up there. Brenda, 49, Cincinnati.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I was wondering if I'm taking about 15 different pills a day for all the stuff that I have.
All right.
And I'm trying to figure out why. In the last 6 months, I now have, if I don't eat something after I take the pills, I get dry heaves. And so I'm wondering how to divide the pills out, or if I can, or can I still take them all together?
What are your problems?
Wait. First, why are you not talking to your doctors about this?
I am talking to my doctors. I even actually saw an ear, nose, and throat guy. He couldn't figure it out.
Okay. Go ahead, Adam.
So basically, I have to do this on my own.
That's what's going on.
Well, these are
going
to be psychiatric meds.
Right.
Well, yeah, I am. They're not. Well, the only psychiatric one is Zoloft.
The only one?
Yeah.
What are all the other ones?
The rest are torsemide, tregetol.
Okay, hold on a second.
Carbidazole.
Okay. You've already named the Tegretol is a seizure medicine that's used for psychiatric reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that's because I have trigeminal neuralgia.
Okay.
Oh, boy. So what happened? Someone molested you?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, so you're passing out.
Oh, well, I'll take that back. I was raped when I was 13 by two people, or almost raped. I'm not quite sure because I don't quite remember it. I was on a trip to Washington, D.C. with my class when it happened.
Okay.
And I'm going to bet some physical abuse, too.
There's something, yeah. So was your dad abusive? Was somebody abusive?
Should have brought our money out and bet.
Wow. That's cruel, Drew.
The rest of the whole world is abusive.
I
was abused when I was in nursery school.
Yeah.
I was abused by babysitters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have PTSD, but the trigeminal neuralgia is hereditary.
All right. So
my dad had it. His mother had it.
I understand, but your perception of how it affects you is not hereditary. And there's a part of the brain called the insular cortex, which is the part of the brain that determines what we call the affective charge of pain, or the misery index, let's just call it, the misery component of pain. So on one hand, you feel the physical pain, the somatic component, but how you experience that then is something attributable to the insular cortex. And if you've been sexually, physically abused, abandoned, neglected, all that kind of good stuff, that insula goes nuts and doesn't work right. And also, with all that abuse in your past, information coming out of your body becomes disorganized and scary and overwhelming, and sort of it sort of exceeds the brain's upper limit, its capacity to regulate the information. And that's where you experience these overwhelming pains and panic and mood problems and all these good things. So why are we not getting some trauma therapy?
Well, because there's no place for me to go to get therapy right now.
Okay.
I'm on disability because I went blind in 2013, legally blind. I have sight in one eye that's very limited.
So let's stay with the medicine. So it's Tegretol, it's Zoloft, it's, I think you said...
It's hydralazine or
Hydroxyzine? Hydralazine, the blood pressure medicine, all right? Keep going. Well,
yeah.
Hydralazine has... Hydralazine, you've been on that a long time or short?
Long time.
All right, keep going. Hydralazine is very old-fashioned medicine.
Metrolazone.
Metalazone.
Torsamide. Carbidazole.
Yeah, all those diuretics and the steroids. What are the steroids for? Did I hear carbidazole? Some sort of steroid? Anyway.
Carbidazole.
The diuretics.
It's the heart.
Yeah. All those diuretics are going to be a little tough on your system, too.
Hey, Brenda.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to do something that's going to be impossible, but do you think you can change your life? I mean, do you think you can sort of seize control of it? Do you think you can turn your ship around?
Listen to the podcast I did with Wes Chapman. He's a guy that had his third or fourth suicide attempt by the time he was seven, mm-hmm. and was in a locked, padded room as a teenager and turned it around. What number is that, Gary? The West Chapman one? We did two of them, but the first one is what I'm thinking of. And he talks vividly about that. He did it on my podcast. So,
well, everyone always tries to talk me out of this speech.
But 275, 275. Go ahead, Gary.
My question is, what's the alternative?
Is to be chronically caught and stuck and take lots of medicine.
Well, Drew, you've sat next to me long enough when I've explained, please stop explaining the list of things that are wrong with you.
Please. Me personally?
No. Everyone calling in, please stop telling me what happened to you. Please start focusing on what we can do about it, how we're going to do this, why we're going to do it, not the... I was a victim of this, I was a victim of that, I was a victim of everything else.
The one thing that victimization does is it leaves a part of the self sort of walled off mm-hmm. and unattended to, and it kind of demands attention at some point. I'm thinking that all this mob stuff we're seeing is those parts of people gathering together and sort of gratifying each other.
Well, get into it in tomorrow's show.
Do it. Do
you first.
Stamps.com, baby.
Yeah,
you use it here for everything. Buy and ship official U.S. postage for any letter, package, or class of mail. At your own computer, your own printer. They'll even send you a digital scale so you can automatically calculate the precise postage for any class of mail, any package, any letter, anything. You get it exactly right. And I swear to God, it's a moving target what the hell the price is for a stamp every day.
I have no idea. I'm happy to say. We have stamps.com.
It does it for you right now. Enjoy stamps with a special 4-week trial plus postage and that digital scale without any long-term commitments. So you go to stamps.com, go click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and you type in ADS, that is stamps.com, enter ADS, and you will get that 4-week trial plus postage, digital scale, set it up, put every letter or package you could possibly want on that particular scale, comes right up in your computer, they print it out on your printer, off it goes with your mailman. Again, type in ADS on the microphone at the top of the homepage, stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office, you can do with stamps, so never go to the post office again.
All right. Las Vegas, Caesar's Palace, coming up Thursday, July 13th. We've been doing a live podcast there and hanging out after the show and saying hi. Go to AdamCarolla.com for all the events and all the Mangria and all the No Safe Space, all the everything. It's all there. Drew, what do you got?
Dr.com, get all the good stuff there. Lots of interesting pods going up with that Drew podcast, This Life, me and Bob Forrest. Me and Mike Cathwood are doing some pods. Check that out.
Mike. So, until next time, I'm Kroll for Dr. Drew saying, mahalo.